This is the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 106 for the week of December 1st, 2010.
Welcome back to the Experience Points Podcast. I'm George Alborn.
My name's Scott Juster.
And we are the co-creators of experiencepoints.blogspot.com, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. And today we are squeezing babies' cheeks, we're going to the petting zoo, and we're talking about the cute aesthetic. And this is something that we're drawing largely from Michael's recent discussion about Kirby's Epic Yarn, which is the latest Kirby iteration from Nintendo that transforms the entire world of Kirby into textured yarn. Things have buttons on them. It's all very cute and adorable. And it kind of reminded me about a lot of the other games that have been coming out that have aspects that are cute, or the entire package is fundamentally cute. I think something like, I think Professor Layton is a cute game. And I think it would be interesting to talk about what makes these games cute. What is that cute aesthetic? Is that something that people are trying to grab onto? Because in my opinion, it feels like it's something that's relatively new, but also becoming very popular.
Yeah, I'd like to start with that, whether it's new or not, because I was trying to think if games have been growing progressively cuter. And, I mean, one reason why I think maybe they have is that I think cuteness is linked with roundness.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, you know, big, round eyes, like you were saying, cheeks, you know, just, like, soft lines. And it's really hard to do roundness on, like, a Nintendo. Like, things are going to look blocky and sprite-like. And, like, Mario is not that cute back in 1985 on screen. But in 2010, Mario is way more, you know, relatively speaking, cute.
Yeah, because you know, he's like
pudgy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. So he's got a belly. He has, like, even his mustache is kind of poofy. I don't know. Do you think that there's something to that?
I like that. Yeah, the technological limitations of cuteness. We've advanced our cute technology to unprecedented levels.
We can rebuild him.
But you know, what about games like Toe Jam and Earl? Would you say that was cute?
Well, I would say that's more radical because it was in the 90s.
Yeah.
But I see what you're getting at. I mean, there's definitely maybe hand-drawn is a little bit too far, but, I mean, an animated style to it. A fantastic style, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Michael mentions a couple games. He mentions Viva Pinata, which is relatively old, but nothing compared to, you know, Nintendo era.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I absolutely think it's new. And the other thing, you know, we've had Pokemon for a while, and I think you could say Pokemon is relatively cute. Although, I think that's an outlier because it's based off of an existing, quote-unquote, cute franchise.
Well, I mean, I think also Pokemon's attraction is also that there's a lot of outside lore surrounding it. I mean, Pikachu is just a little tiny sprite on a Game Boy, but he's also complemented by an animated series in which he has a cute little voice, and he's complemented by a bunch of plush toys, and I think there's like a broader identity outside of the game that probably lends to his appeal.
Yeah, and I would also say, I would also differentiate the type of cute games that we're talking about here and the games that are designed to be cute, like, I don't know, maybe Nintendogs, for example. That's a cute game, but it serves a very small niche market, right? Mostly children. You know, it's targeted
maybe towards though. I mean, but almost everyone in Japan has one of those. Well, I mean, they can't all Japan be children.
Japan is populated by children, Scott. You're right. You're right, though. That's true.
But I mean, what is the function of it? I mean, it's to, you know, be a facsimile of a dog or a puppy, really.
The cute aesthetic is now widely accepted in games that are for quote-unquote normal gamers, you know, traditional players. You know, Kirby is a classic franchise, and he's always been cute. But Epic Yarn is just above and beyond adorableness.
So in relation to the actual mechanics and dynamics of the game, I had heard, and I haven't played it, but I had heard Kirby was not that challenging as far as its difficulty.
Yeah, I played through all of Kirby and I found it far too easy. Mm-hmm. And listeners of the show know that I'm not one to usually make that claim. I'm a coward, so I'm happy playing a game that's not very difficult. But
was it easy because it was short, or was it like I don't even really know the structure. Like, is it a collectible based game, or is it like a level end to level beginning to level end type game?
Yeah, so I mean, each you have maps essentially, and each map has a series of levels, and each level, you know, it's a platformer basically from point A to point B.
Okay,
and there are collectibles within those levels that can add a certain amount of challenge, the way that Mario has classically been able to, you know, make it the difficulty optional. But that tier of difficulty is not very high. It's not very difficult to get all of the puzzle pieces and the very hard to reach, you know, tokens and buttons and all that. So I found the game, not very entertaining personally. It's cute. Huh. It's adorable, but
it's a visual thing. Like it's an aesthetic thing.
It's a visual thing, and I don't know if difficulty is necessarily tied to the cuteness. I wonder if people played, or rather the designers of Kirby's Epic Yarn thought about the difficulty in the game and figured that a less difficult game matches better with the cute aesthetic.
But cause did you play it with another person as well? Because I heard it was also co-op.
Sometimes I played with a second player, and that just made it easier. It didn't really add anything to the game. I mean, it's fun to play two players. I love cooperative gaming, but it didn't add any level of challenge to it.
Can you mess with each other to make it harsher?
Yeah, you could pick someone up, but you know it's not the way that you could mess with people in the new Super Mario Brothers Wii, for example.
Oh yeah.
Which is much more threatening.
Oh yeah, that is the devil's game. And by I mean friends.
I would say that New Super Mario Bros. Wii is still really cute. And Little Big Planet, I think, is cute, but very difficult.
Well yeah, that's the thing. I mean there's a lot of games out there, and I think there's a fairly long tradition of games that resemble what cartoons look like. You know, there's almost a Disney-esque vibe to them. But once you pick up the controller, the effortlessness that you see in an animated movie or a Saturday morning cartoon is really hard to execute. Like, it's hard to make those things move the way you expect them to move.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Little Big Planet is one of the biggest offenders of this. Like, it's kind of a wolf in sheep's clothing. Little Big Planet is notoriously hard to just to get a handle on because it's floaty. There's three different planes that you're playing on in, you know, there's three different dimensions basically on it.
Yeah.
And also those last levels are really harsh in the single player campaign anyway.
Would you say then you felt betrayed by the cuteness?
Sackboy. Et tu, Sackboy. No. I mean, I guess I wasn't, I didn't really go in with many preconceived notions, but there were times where I would just go online and hang out at the last few levels of the game and help people through them. Like, there would be people that are just hanging out on those levels, not being able to finish them. And so I would jump
nice
in
you.
And like, cause I liked them cause they were pretty hard and I enjoy like a good platformer. And so I would just go to the last levels and link up with people who seem to be stuck and get through them.
Nice. Nice.
And I don't think that people could possibly expect something like that. I mean, you know, you have an intro and like there's a bunch of serene looking people and Stephen Fry is cooing in your ear. You have no idea that by the end of the game you're going to be throwing the controller in rage because you've failed at this thing for 25 times in a row.
Yeah. Well, do you think that the cute aesthetic then makes games seem childish? Because, you know, a lot of, like you were saying, the cartoons, a lot of the feel of Mario comes from the kind of appeal it had for younger children in the 80s and what we were used to in terms of a visual look. I know Mario has evolved visually, you know, into three dimensions, but his feel has always been relatively similar, you know?
Yeah. And you mean as far as how he moves and stuff?
I mean, just how he looks. You know, the one outfit kind of guy.
Yeah.
And Kirby, to some extent as well, has always kind of been cute. Or, you know, maybe a better example would be in Epic Yarn, after every completed map area, there's a narrator who tells you, you know, what happened, and yay, Kirby got the magical yarn, and it comes off as though he's reading a children's book.
Mm-hmm.
Does that kind of make the game seem less valuable, or do you think that it kind of sends that message that this is a game for children?
It definitely seems like it's something like, I guess I'm kind of going back to Little Big Planet, but I mean, I think Kirby agrees with itself more. Like, if you're going to have this this soft, fuzzy aesthetic, and the expectation is it could be a less harsh game to play, you know, maybe, you know, there's not that dissonance of being, you know, thrown into a really difficult challenge. But I think it's weird that games that are on the opposite end of the spectrum, gritty, you know, there's some swearing in it, adult material, I sometimes find those much easier than a lot of the games that are kind of childish in their aesthetic. Like, I think something like Gears of War is much more approachable to complete than something like Super Mario Galaxy.
Yeah, if by complete you mean getting all the stars like a madman.
Well, yeah, and I mean even... Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess because there's a scalable difficulty in it. And maybe that's the key for something that is going to be... that it's going to buy into that kind of cute look. You need to be able to accommodate people that are expecting something as docile as the visuals.
Yeah, but it's funny because you could play with that, right? You could play with that cute aesthetic and present a world that is looks like it's approachable, and then just stabs you in the face. You know, I think like Super Meat Boy. I think Super Meat Boy is pretty cute.
Yeah.
The world is flat, it's pretty, it's colorful. Meat Boy's a little square, cute little block, and the enemy is this mustachioed, top-hatted figure. But that game is brutally difficult.
Yeah.
And the same can be said for Little Big Planet to some extent. I think Limbo, for example, has cute elements.
Yes. Yeah.
The little boy in the two-dimensional realm, but then you have these terrifying spiders, you have...
And horrific deaths and stuff. I mean,
it's horrible. But the character model for the boy, at least, I think... looks cute and approachable, as well as the black and white aesthetic.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that's a neat thing for developers to do, to kind of lure folks in with a certain art style.
And then pull the rug out from under them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice little, you know, you're not necessarily expecting it, and so it makes the game more novel and a bit more challenging, because you have to reconcile those two ideas, that something can... look very approachable and still demand a lot of, you know, thinking and a lot of retries.
Yeah. Would you say that Zelda is a cute game?
I've been thinking about Zelda a lot recently for various reasons, and I don't know. I mean, it falls. I mean, I think Link is a really interesting character, mainly because he's not much of one. Like, he's such a blank slate.
Yeah.
You know, I've been reading about people who think of Link as androgynous, or even a female. Like, his features are such that you can kind of just impress whatever you want onto him. I think, like, the vanilla Ocarina of Time style Link, or even the Link to the Past Link, is kind of a more malleable character.
Yeah.
But, like, Wind Waker Link is clearly... I mean, I think he's in Kirby territory, you know?
Yeah. But... I mean, even going back to the earlier Zeldas, his arbiter to the world in the form of a fairy, that's kind of a cute little thing. And a lot of the characters in the games are, like you said, they're chubby, they're abnormally shaped.
Yeah. It's definitely a fantasy... There's a lot of fantasy tropes in there. You know, he's very Peter Pan-esque, you know? I mean, he wears green. He hangs out with, you know, magical fairies.
Yeah.
I don't think he steals children out of windows or anything, but...
Peter Pan is actually terrifying.
I mean, it's something that I think walks a really thin line, because there's also that other side of Link, you know, adult Link, or at least, you know, teenager Link in Ocarina of Time and in Twilight Princess, where they take a darker approach, or a more mature character model, at least.
Yeah. And this is a similar... feel, I imagine, when you're used to a franchise that's cute, and then you go into dark territory, and you feel the weight of that transformation a little bit more than you would if you started in that territory.
And it's something that people are always clamoring for. You know, they always want dark, gritty Link. Like, they want Lord of the Rings-style Link. And I don't know if that's necessarily the most iconic image of him.
Well, why do you think that is? I mean, are people just... They're grown up, and now they want a grown-up version?
I don't know. I don't really... I'm not really sure what the impulse behind that is. Because I think as the years go on, Wind Waker is becoming one of the most enduring games of the entire series. And it's because they used a cartoonish art style that ages really well, and it's very expressive, and you know, it creates these characters that you can empathize with because they look like they actually have emotion.
And so
it's strange that people are trying to push it into a specific direction rather than it being kind of a more malleable thing. But I don't know, I never really got the impulse behind that myself.
Do you think then that maybe going the cute aesthetic might trap you in that sort of approach?
I think that's kind of what happens with Mario and even with Sonic certain extent.
Yeah, I was thinking those two exactly.
Yeah. Sonic has completely gone off the rails. Like, in one of the last games, like, he turned into, like, a badass werehog and, like...
Hey, that's dark.
It is, but it's strangely so. And then in a previous game, I forget which one it is, like, he has a human girlfriend, and it just, like...
Yeah, that's weird.
Shit gets weird. Like, I don't... They're trying to rebel so hard against, you know... And it's interesting, if you look at the evolution of the Sonic character model over the years, he has gotten leaner and spikier, like, sharper. He used to be more pudgy.
Yeah.
And it's, interestingly enough, in Sonic Colors, like the newest Wii game, it's much more fantasy-based again. It's much more cartoonish and cutesy rather than, like, you know, a savage werehog beast. I totally feel like he's trapped.
It's weird looking at how games go back and forth between the cute aesthetic and the not cute aesthetic. You know, Solid Snake made an appearance in Super Smash Brothers. And so we have a character who is decidedly uncute. He is gruff, old man, firing missiles at Kirby, who is the epitome of cute.
But I mean, I think that's like, we're starting to venture into the territory of just straight novelty. I mean, like, it's juxtaposition, you know?
But I guess that's what I'm getting at, right? It feels like the cute aesthetic is often just novelty. And, you know, Michael praises Kirby for not being a gimmick, but mentions that what he calls tactile art design tends to be attached to gimmicky things.
Mm.
But we see a lot of people pulling off successfully the cutesy appeal, right?
Yeah.
Like we were talking about, I think Professor Layton, to some extent, is a cute game. It's also very adult, and I think it's unique, but I think that has a cute aesthetic. Double Fine's Costume Quest, that's cute.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And also thematically so. I mean, it takes a very warm and loving approach to, like, a nostalgic approach to childhood and, like, trick-or-treating
Great.
Fantasizing.
I don't want to disparage these games in the slightest. I think they're fantastic. But I think it's because they're pulling off the cute aesthetic without being gimmicky. You know, and I think Kirby does it, but I think it goes to such an extreme that it starts to feel a bit too childish for me, perhaps. And maybe it's just the difficulty thing we were talking about, but it could also be, you know, it could also be just the yarn itself or the children's story, for example. That really got on my nerves after a while.
Yeah, that reminds me of the children's story that was in Super Mario Galaxy 1, and I feel like the warm, approachable, rotund aesthetic of Super Mario Galaxy was used to kind of hide a sad story. I mean, Super Mario Galaxy has one of the saddest stories ever. Like, the princess that is helping you along the way is revealed to be basically like a lost girl whose mom had died and who came to this realization that she will never see her family again, and she was just kind of like, she had to create a new life for herself. And like, there was some pretty weird and rough stuff going on, like, under the surface of that game that you could totally gloss over if you're just willing to look at it on a surface level, and if you only want to look at it on a surface level. So it's this way of disguising deeper messages in it, which I think might kind of speak to how children's stories work in general.
Yeah, I mean, I love children's books. I taught 3 courses on children's books. A lot of them are very deep, and the best ones are very deep, and I think children like them for that reason. And it's interesting the way you talked about the Mario narrative, because that sounds like the way you talk about their difficulty philosophy, you know, where it's there if you want it. If you can find it and explore it and that's something that you're into, then go for it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think Mario is a special case in it, but I mean, I definitely think that if people are looking for it and if they want to do a little bit of digging, there's definitely a more interesting story in there than there usually is when you get into like the Mushroom Kingdom.
I would say that game's probably an outlier though from most of the stories, but
probably. Yeah. Are there any games that you can think of that shocked you? I mean, you're a pretty seasoned gamer. You're not going to be surprised by a lot of stuff, but are there any games out there whose cute art style that either surprised you by how well it worked or how well it hid the difficulty?
Yeah. I think Kirby actually is... I mean, I was surprised by how well Kirby worked. Right away, I was like, you know, this is a little much. Reading the children's books to me, I just want to get into the game. And I felt that same way with Mario as well. But, I mean, the game is undoubtedly charming. The music is fantastic. So I really enjoyed Epic Yarn's aesthetic and the entire feel of it. I think Michael Abbott's right when saying that it makes you feel a bit more connected to the game because you want to hold it and just hug it to death, you know, like a teddy bear or something. I think Professor Layton does that to some extent as well. The story is very adult, but, you know, certain characters are a bit more cute than others. You know, even the notion of going around talking to villagers and having you solve puzzles for them hides the fact that some of those puzzles are very difficult and some of the story elements are very adult.
I was thinking about Katamari.
Yeah,
because I feel like Katamari is one of those games that people try to give to folks that don't play games as an example of, oh, here's something approachable, like it's bright and colorful and very warm in its look. But that game is really hard.
Yeah.
You know, it requires dual stick manipulation, which is really tough if you're not used to using both of your thumbs in concert to do something. And there's a time limit. Like, it's not something where you wander around, you know, with childlike wonder at your leisure. Like, there's always this clock that's ticking, and there's this king of the cosmos that's just relentlessly insulting you whenever you try to do something.
yeah, absolutely. I think Donkey Kong is up there.
Which, again, just had another big release in the new Donkey Kong Country Returns.
Yeah, which is funny because Donkey Kong Country is, I mean, it's. I don't know if it was their first 3D Donkey Kong game.
I mean, it was like a 3D rendered characters.
Yeah, but that's my point. It gives them a bit more a tactical shape, right? The backgrounds, the bananas, all of it's generally pretty cute.
Yeah.
So it's funny that they're going back to that again, and I think they're going back to that for good reason, right? Because they think that this is a type of aesthetic that is appealing to a lot of people right now.
And it's something that also masked a pretty difficult game. I mean, as far as the Super Nintendo version goes, those games were one-hit death games. I mean, like, you could not take another hit. And there was a lot of, you know, secret paths through the levels and so, you know, something that sounds very much the opposite of what the newest Kirby game is.
Yeah.
I'll be interested to kind of see people's thoughts to the new, you know, to the new version of it to see if it, you know, follows that tradition.
As an outlier, I think Lego has sharp corners, but that's still a really cute game. And that,
oh, yeah.
But instead of hiding difficulty, it hides a shitty game.
Yeah, that's right, Christian. We're going to rag on Lego some more. Now, I think that, you know, in the Lego game's defense, I think they use their art style really well to pantomime the stories.
Yeah.
And to tell the stories of the games and the books that they're trying to portray. But yeah, I mean, God, the only reason those games work is because how they look. I mean, who would play those games if they didn't look like Legos?
Yeah, and if we didn't have some sort of nostalgia for Legos in the first place.
Or nostalgia for Indiana Jones or Batman or whatever.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Like,
it's a dual nostalgia thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the darker side of making things cute because... you know, you might be able just to ride on you know, the awe factor instead of putting something out there that's substantial.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I think, you know, this conversation has at least kind of convinced me that that's more the exception than the rule. You know, it seems like the strongest examples we have of cartoonish and cutesy art design live in games that are also really solid from a mechanical standpoint.
Yeah. Well, when we talk about zombie games, for example, we mentioned that maybe people are going to get sick of that.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that people are going to grow tired of the cute aesthetic? It's funny because, you know, in the past we've talked about gritty realism as an aesthetic and as something that's increasingly popular. And I think that right now, if you look at a slew of popular games and games that are relatively successful, a lot of them are aiming to be adorable and cute and you know, visually approachable.
Especially when you take into consideration the new slate of Kinect and Sony Move games, because a lot of those are just kind of warmed over versions of Wii launch stuff. You know, it's interesting. The Kinect thing in particular, I think cuteness could backfire because I was watching a quick look of the Kinectimals game.
Yeah, that's adorable.
Well, it is, but it doesn't work all that well. Like, you kind of have to repeat gestures sometimes because Kinect won't pick it up, or maybe the throwing mechanics are kind of wonky. And for if you're really trying to make that appeal to people that either don't play games or children that don't have a good sense of the technical reasons why something might not work,
yeah,
it could backfire on you. Like, something looks like it should just effortlessly work, but with really complicated technology like Kinect, it could just end up backfiring because it's really hard to get those stupid Kinectimals to do what you want them to do.
And if you were to explain that, it would kind of ruin the illusion, right? It's like opening up your teddy bear and seeing all of its parts.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You're like opening up Teddy Rumpkins or whatever and seeing the terrifying robot that lives underneath.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. Is there anything else, or have we given ourselves cavities with all of this sweetness?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go hug my stuffed animals.
I think I'm going to go chainsaw some folks in Gears of War. I just need to cleanse myself of all this adorableness. Of course, I mean, Coltrane is a pretty cute guy, so Coltrane maybe...
The funny thing, too, is the Gears characters are abnormally shaped. So
yeah, they would make really good plush figures.
They totally would.
All right, let's get on this before Epic can sue us and see how much money we can make. All right, if you folks want to write in with your most adorable emails, experiencepoints@gmail.com is the address.
If you can think of some really cute older games that you recall playing as a kid or something, let us know in the comments section to this podcast. You can also leave your comments to any of our posts. We update the site Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evenings, so come on by and bring your friends and children. It's cute.
All right. Next time, see you later, you adorable butters.